This is Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation on the international issues flowing around us. Once again, Dr. Jared Ball is with us. He is an associate professor at Morgan State University's School of Global Journalism and Communication, co-editor of Malcolm X, Life of Reinvention, and author of I Mix What I Like, a mixtape manifesto. He can be found online at imixwhatilike.org. Dr. Adil Shamu is associate fellow of the Institute of Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., senior analyst with Foreign Policy and Focus, author of the book Equal Worth, When Humanity Will Have Peace. And Dr. Stephen Bucci is with us, a director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy for the Heritage Foundation. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Let's begin with where we are in the Middle East with Gaza and beyond. I mean, I think that it's interesting that the whole question of a Palestinian the whole Palestinian issue that was in the forefront for so long in headlines fell by the wayside with all the other issues, especially coming out of the Arab and Muslim world. And now with this new launch of a war in Gaza, that has all changed. And it's back on the front burner, which could mean many things. So let's give our overarching analysis of what we think this does mean. And Stephen Bucci, let me begin with you.
Well, I think this has been an issue that's been festering for a while, and you know, Israel has gone in to try and stop the rockets and that sort of thing in the past, but this latest round after the killing of the three teenagers and the killing of a Palestinian teenager has led Israel to try and take steps to finalize this the end of what they see as a major threat. So I think that's what's brought it to the fore. I don't think that the other events have added to it. They just unfortunately have come at a very close proximity time-wise.
There was a piece today, Adil Shamu, that I was reading about the issue that kind of said this is actually what we're seeing here now is going to push this all to the forefront for some time to come and could actually work against Israel's interests. I'm curious your analysis.
Well, I think the issue is not the rocket. I mean, the killing of those poor three young Israelis. That is indefensible and a crime and a cold-blooded crime. And whoever did it should be punished. As you know, at the beginning they blamed Hamas, and now it's really agreed on at least in the media and what you read in the newspapers that. That wasn't Hamas, was it most likely the Islamic Jihad. But nevertheless, I think that was an excuse in order to change the narrative and the conversation in the Middle East by an extremely right-wing government of Netanyahu. And the way you change the narrative, you say, let's go to war with Iran, basically, because they have nuclear weapons and they are existential threats, and this way pushed back the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. What they wanted to do is really destroy the unity government of Abbas with Hamas, despite the fact that Abbas took over, basically, Hamas organization. They made unity government, and they made the cabinet with not a single Hamas member. Nevertheless, they wanted to shoot it down, and they have really, in a way, succeeded, because the narrative, especially in the American media, basically takes the side of the Israelis. And let's analyze that very quickly, and that is when these three people were killed, Israel went into military action against Palestinians in Gaza and elsewhere, and they killed six. Then there was one who was stabbed and burned alive. That's seven. And then they arrested over 250 Palestinians at West Bank who were released by Israel. So to me, the proportionality should have been satisfied. Israel should have been satisfied. They killed seven, okay? Whoever killed those three poor young Israelis, that's three. And then I arrested over 250. That is where it become to me an excuse. What do they want? They invaded Gaza, and that's really the problem. He wanted to erase the issue of two-state solution for another 3 to 5 years because he has no interest. And I'm not the only one saying that. Two non-radical people, Michael O'Hanlon and Peter Beinart, both agreed. They said the current prime minister has no interest in two-state solution. We have to wait maybe several years where there will be an Israeli leader who is willing to go through the process of two-state solution. Because so, Abbas agreed on every term he was told by John Kerry and Israel.
Jacob, let me get your initial thoughts, and I have some questions for the three of you here.
Sure. I mean, well, of course, I think we really need to start with the fact that Israel continues to be a Zionist imperial project that has never and continues to not ever have the concerns of the freedom or the sovereignty of Palestinian people as a concern. In fact, quite the opposite. For so many years now, people, particularly on the left, I think have accurately noted that Israel has no interest in peace and does what it can to maintain a permanent state of war for a number of reasons, including its own self-justification and rationalization for its control of this land and space and of the people in Palestine. I think it's interesting to note also that in terms of the most recent events, the three young Israelis were killed by, as it was claimed, by the ISIS group. And then, as we now seen from the papers released by Frank Snowden, ISIS is itself a creation of the British, the U.S., and Israel itself. So in this sense, Israel created a group that now claims credit for killing these three young people, which Israel uses as a pretense to then increase its war against the Palestinian people. And it's really not even fair to call it a war. It's not. It's that suggests there's some sort of balance or power equality in here when there is clearly not. One other piece that I think needs to just be said at least very quickly is that that these wars or these reinvasions and remilitarization efforts also coincide, as was reported on the Real News Network recently, with corporate weapons manufacturers. You know, every couple of years is a new invasion and new sets of funds are released to private corporations to develop new military technology. I'm on the phone here, by the way, from Panama, and this is something that was seen down here as well. The United States, the invasion of Reagan was preceded, and then also saw subsequent to that the increase in military technology development, and things were tried out down here, much as is the case in Israel and Palestine, where new military technology has to be tried out. So new means of justifications have to be brought up in perpetuity. But again, if this issue of what Zionism is and what Israel's political project actually is not adequately dealt with, we're going to continue to see these cycles of events continue. And this is why I think it is important that people like Norman Finkelstein have said, you know, he himself has said, I have to go past what I'm writing and what I'm saying and get involved. He got himself arrested recently because he and others are noting that this is just a cycle that continues to repeat itself. With justification being used, something, you know, the ridiculousness of rockets or whatever. But the reality is that the imperial project of Israel has to continue and has to continue to find means of justifying itself. And this is just the latest endeavor.
Well, Stephen Bucci, I want you to comment on what you just heard the last couple of speakers say, just in terms of your analysis of that, but also there's a complexity to this issue that I think that many of us don't want to wrestle with, both inside of Israel, inside the Palestinian community, and beyond. I'm curious what your response is to what you've heard.
Well, first of all, I with deference to both my esteemed colleagues, they're both sort of ignoring the fact that Hamas pretty regularly shoots rockets randomly at civilian targets. They do so, and I've been there when they've done it. They do so specifically when students are moving from their homes where they have safe rooms to their schools where they have safe rooms. It baffles me that people can just completely ignore that half of the equation. That is what predicated the control measures that went on when they originally gave Gaza back to the Palestinians. Before Hamas basically took over and started using it as a base for their operations, that, you know, there were not a lot of restrictions at first. It was only after that. And then when you add to it the incredible amount of tunnels that were built with materials that should have gone to fix Palestinian houses, but instead went in. Even the Israeli intel people were astounded at how many tunnels had been built specifically to execute terrorist acts back into Israel. I mean, come on, there's two sides to this thing at least, and to ignore those is sort of baffling.
Well, let me think. Well, was that Adil?
Yeah. I'm not ignoring it. I think Hamas may do some of the things which you and I call a terrorist act. But as you well know, all of you, that the revolutionary movement, there are all the time splinter groups who do things, including our own revolution, including the founding of Israel, including the Chinese, the Russians, you name it. There are splinter groups who abuse the other side in the name of freedom. But that's really not the issue. This is exactly what Netanyahu wants you to talk about, wants me to talk about, and wants Gerald also to talk about. The issue is for many years, for decades, they said they should renounce violence, right? And they should declare the right of Israel to exist, plus other things, okay? Abbas agreed to all that. He renounced violence. Okay. As a matter of fact, he was hand in hand with Israeli security forces arresting opponent of Israel in West Bank. And what did he get for 8 years? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. George Mitchell told him, look, Abbas, you got to accept what we are offering you now, because you know from your previous experience, every time this is delayed 2-3 more years, you get less. And that's exactly what happened. So I am dismissing Hamas's issue, because that will be taken care of once the issue is resolved of the two-state solution. Why didn't they agree on the terms they themselves proposed? The goalposts keep moving because they have no interest in a two-state solution. What they want to do is to have one Israel where you have pontoons, you know, little islands of Palestinian people of 50,000 here, 100,000 here, 200,000 here, like, you know, the good old South African, you know, the apartheid regime. And they will be very happy. And the reason they could do that, Israel is very powerful, is supported by the only superpower in the world, is given ammunition and other military and money and billions of dollars. We've given them, like, I think over $120 billion since their existence. So they have no incentive, really, to resolve the issue with the Palestinian. But the Palestinian, in the meantime, I mean, look at the pictures. Look, if you've been to there, look who is destitute, who is poor, who has infection, who has the worst hospital. Not the Israelis, the Palestinian. Who has Nike shoes, cell phones, swimming pools in their backyard? It's the Israelis. And yes, they work very hard, but at the same time, they're living well and they care less. I mean, look at the right-wing writers in Israel, what they say. So, they should kill all the mothers. They should expel all the Israeli Arabs from their country. I mean, these are top politicians are saying that. It's not some just small fringe group.
So they're also saying, by the way, if I could just quickly add, that they're calling, it's interesting to see Israelis calling for the use of gas chambers against Palestinians, which I find particularly disgusting.
Who said
as
that?
Well. But this was, there was a report.
Yeah, I actually read that.
And, yeah,
I don't know
there was a report, and they were also showing pictures of it written on walls in Israel. But very quickly, that this was sort of my point in the beginning, as my colleague just said a moment ago, that he wants us to focus on the other half of the equation. That again gives the false perception that there is a balance in this so-called equation. So for whatever civilians have been targeted or hit in Israel by Hamas rockets, that cannot be equated to the hundreds that are killed and targeted in Palestine as Israel bombs UN safe spaces and schools that they know are there, that they know are being used as refuge that they have themselves told the Palestinians to go to. Never mind the fact that Israel controls the land, the water, the migration, the electricity, the employment. They have They have drones flying over Palestine almost 24/7 at this point. Meanwhile, Israelis have access not only to the cell phone technology that most in the West enjoy comfortably, but applications that will tell them when these Hamas rockets are being fired at them to give them maximum protection and security. So this is not an issue of leaving out one half of the equation. This is an issue of putting into proper perspective the context that is actually occurring here, so that people have a better understanding about what exactly is happening and why elements of a resistance might want to engage in violence. And very quickly, I think it's also important that we return to the original definition of terrorism coming out of the French Revolution, which is what the state does to the powerless, not what the powerless do in response to the state. So if anything, if we're going to use these words accurately, what the Palestinians or what some members of Hamas or others may be engaged in Islamic Jihad or others is counterterrorism against the terrorist actions of the state of Israel against the powerless or far more weaker people of Palestine.
So, Stephen, let me come back in. I mean, there's a lot been said here, but I mean, I think before I move on to Ukraine, which I want to do, I mean, I want to get your analysis, but there's a question I have for the three of you that we didn't get to from the things that everybody was saying here that I think have to be asked, and given some of the things you were saying as well, Jared. But Stephen Bucci, how do we deal with this question of what American policy should be, the question of state, if there is a state terrorism or there's terrorism on the part of others, that the response we're seeing now, I think if it wasn't Israel, that most Americans, most people in the world wouldn't put up with, would they?
Well, I don't think many people would put up with having someone fire rockets into your sovereign territory and then tell you don't respond to it. I don't think the United States would fail to respond if one of our neighbors was shooting rockets at us. I don't think any sovereign nation in the world would just stand by, unless you're Ukraine and it happens to be Russia and you don't have much choice. When the rockets come from Gaza into Israel to try and tell Israel they should not respond, I have to tell you, as a military guy with 30 years in the military and quite a bit of experience in military history, no nation in the world has taken the steps to minimize civilian casualties that Israel has taken. The fact that Israel's Iron Dome can stop most of those rockets, what are we supposed to tell them? Don't use it so their civilians can be killed too? I'm sorry, there's no moral equivalence between Israel and Hamas, and I don't think my two colleagues would probably, they would agree with that statement, but they would put it in the opposite direction than I would.
Well, of course. I mean, what would we always say to the people of Palestine who desire sovereignty, that they shouldn't respond when Israel drops bombs on them? I mean, if you're going to use that logic, it has to go both ways. What group desiring sovereignty would allow itself to be treated as Palestinians are treated by the state of Israel on a day-to-day basis?
For 70 years.
So,
you said we did not withdraw. We withdrew from Vietnam while the Viet Cong were shooting at us rockets and bullets. We withdrew from Iraq, and we are about to withdraw completely from, we withdrew a lot from Afghanistan. So resistance to occupation has resulted in even us, the superpower, in withdrawing. Yes, it's not on our shores, and in a way I'm grateful that it's not in our own shores, but nevertheless, we have withdrawn under military pressure, under resistance. As an occupying power, there was resistance to us. There was suicide bombing, right? There was other things to us.
I don't think those are quite the same situations as a sovereign nation next to another piece of territory. I don't think it would be, that'd be like saying, okay, we should withdraw from Michigan because the Canadians started shooting rockets at us. I don't think we would do that. I think we would go in and stop the rockets from coming at us in the same way Israel is trying to do right now.
And occupy entire Canada. And Canada has no right to resist us. I mean, that's really the logic.
That may be your analysis, but I would disagree.
Well, but see, this is, again, the problem. If Israel actually desires peace, it would stop treating the Palestinians this way. We keep skipping that part of the conversation, that part of the reality, that there is something being done on a daily basis to the Palestinian people that causes this response. If that unjust, ignoble relationship were to end, then there could be another conversation where rockets to continue to be fired at Israeli civilians. But until that is dealt with, much of this conversation is unfortunately pointless.
I'm here with Dr. Adil Shamu, Dr. Jared Ball, and Dr. Stephen Bucci. We'll take a very brief break, but when we come back, we'll hear the rest of our conversation on this International News Roundtable. On our way to break, we're hearing Buena Vista Vow by Beastie Boys. Adam Yauch was born on this day in 1964. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and you're listening to WEAA 88.9 FM, celebrating the 88 days of summer. Details at WEAA.org. And that's Rock and Roll, performed by the Runaways. On this day in 1975, the Runaways was formed, making them the first ever all-female heavy rock band. And I'm talking with Dr. Adil Shamu, Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and Senior Analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus. Dr. Jared Ball, Associate Professor at Morgan State University's School of Global Journalism and Communication. Co-editor of Malcolm X, A Lie of Reinvention, and author of I Mix What I Like. And Dr. Stephen Bucci, Director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation. We're talking about international politics this hour. I want to switch gears to the Ukraine here for a moment and what American policy and what our policy should be around Ukraine and Russia. And I've been reading some articles mentioned to pick up next time we talk, though that has to do with Hamas as well, that what a different picture it might have been if all the things smuggled into Gaza were used to build infrastructure rather than tunnels. Israel may still have attacked, but you'd have a very different place. Right now, even the people in Gaza can't even use those tunnels to hide in. And I think that, I mean, there's a lot of there are questions here, especially addressed at that sometimes people are pushed into a corner of saying, almost like backing Hamas, or not backing Hamas when they oppose Israel's occupation or move into Gaza. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I think that's what I'm saying. It's a complex situation.
Well, look, the International Human Rights Commission condemned what Israel is doing to civilians. The Human Rights Watch condemned
right.
it. And all those familiar with the Geneva Conventions have condemned what they're doing to civilians. There is no way, Steve, you could justify the amount of civilian getting killed and children and women. Just unconscionable, really, what they're doing.
Do you think it's conscionable that in those same UN schools that Hamas was storing rockets, and that they put their rocket launchers in civilian areas deliberately to try and deter Israel from shooting there, or tell the civilians when they get the warnings from the Israeli military, don't leave the building, don't give in to them? Come on.
Three of these schools were empty. Just the UN head in Gaza just answered this question. CNN keep harping at him. And the other three, there were none. The Israelis then claimed 100 yards away from the school, there were a terrorist, okay? And they shot and hit UN safe zone in the schools. Now, how could you justify that 100 yards away, and they said they are terrorists? You could all the time make up that story. And 100 yards? Why couldn't – I mean, it's just ridiculous. Is that the accuracy, 100 yards away? And how many times they have repeated that excuse?
Well, I have to tell you, war is not as precise as we'd like it to be. And 100 yards is not a heck of a lot of space when you're in active combat. It's a mistake that can be made very easily. And this could be solved very quickly if Hamas would just say, okay, we're going to stop shooting the rockets. They will not even admit the right of Israel to exist. Come on, guys.
But that's not the big fish here. Why Israel then? You tell me why Israel doesn't negotiate two-state solution with Hamas. Forget Hamas.
But Hamas is shooting rockets at him. How could they ignore them?
I'm interrupting because I do want to switch gears here, and I want to switch gears
okay.
to talk about what has happened in Ukraine, U.S. and Western Europe's involvement in Ukraine, Russia's response, where we find ourselves now with the Ukrainian army moving in against the Russians. And we've been covering this a lot over the weeks, and we've come to this place now where this could either be a civil war. How deeply does the United States get involved? We're talking about sending people to help Ukraine figure out how to run their own missile system. So where are we, Stephen Bucci?
Well, we're at a very delicate point. It's clear that Vladimir Putin is willing to push the limit of what he can get away with against NATO and against the West. He was furious about Ukraine wanting to not be associated with his organization rather than with the West, and he's pushing the limits, and until he gets some significant signals back that we're not going to stand for this, he's going to keep doing it. And I'm not advocating we go to war, trust me. But I think there are some signals that we could send beyond just the verbal and some of the economic sanctions that hopefully would deter him and would bring everybody back down to a more reasonable level.
Jared, how do you see it?
Well, I mean, I think, again, the United States has played the improper role in the world, unfortunately, that it should be playing by assisting in the destabilizing in the coup in Ukraine to trigger more anti-Russia hysteria. And is using the downed airliner as a pretense for sanctions, despite the fact that there's zero evidence that Russia did it, and quite the contrary, and that more likely U.S.-supported sides in Ukraine had more to do with the downed airliner. But both the so-called rebels and the United States are denying any access to, or denying any involvement, and denying any access to the study of what actually happened with the airliner, despite Russia's overwhelming attempt to give information about the airliner and what was not their role in that incident. And it seems to me that this is more about, again, challenging Russia and creating a crisis where none need be created than helping the world or helping that region of the world sustain peace and sovereignty and equality for the people over there. And this is again what I think is a major problem, going back to the last topic, not to go back there, but related to the last topic, that the U.S. role as the singular superpower in the world is one that is again an ignoble one, that where this country is not doing enough to use its power and might to aid the world, and is using what it can to create crisis so it can challenge what might be the number one contender, or a top contender to the throne of dominance in the world. And that's so everything is being blamed on Putin in the same way everything is blamed on Hamas in the last topic, and the role of the United States in its support of this coup in Ukraine, and even the question of why is the United States involved in such activity is not being enough questioned, I think, here, at least in the United States and other in popular media and other circles.
Before we turn to Adil, Steve, I'll give you a chance to respond, then I'm going to hear what Adil thinks.
I have a hard time feeling terribly sorry for the Russians when, you know, these guys in the green uniforms with no patches that are carrying weapons that only the Russian army has, and then they say, well, they're just local militiamen, you know, and then you have a boat with Russian armored cars, nominally peacekeepers, sitting outside all the polling places. It's hardly a legitimate election at that point. They had an uprising in Kiev and major demonstrations. I don't know how much influence you think our forces have in those sort of things, but I was a Green Beret, and I could tell you we're not that good at that sort of thing. The Russians are clearly very, very adept at this, what we would refer to as fifth-gen warfare. And their actions have been a lot more skillful than ours, I have to tell you.
Well, I'm not talking about the U.S. military as much as the U.S. State Department in fomenting this division in Ukraine, which is not an issue of the Green Berets. It's an issue of foreign policy at the state level. And this is the point I'm trying to make. It's not, for me, an issue of military. And again, what Russia is looking at this as an issue of their own sovereignty and the protection of their borders. Now, right or wrong, if we want to, as a dominant nation in the world, if we want to achieve peace and peaceable negotiations and peaceful ways of dealing with challenges and with discrepancies or differences in the world, then we can't be fomenting coups and encouraging military strikes and then defending the rebels and shooting down. When all the evidence shows that they shoot down an airliner, defending that and blaming it on the Russians, which of course is going to heighten and encourage the militarism that you're talking about, which of course, right or wrong, I honestly can't say, the Russians are claiming is independent militias and not the state-sanctioned activity. But again, if the issue is peaceful dealings with in the world, the United States has to take a different approach and cannot be continuing to foment coup d'etat and supporting military strikes against civilians.
So on our way back, Stephen Adol, you want to jump in this?
Yeah. You see, to me, it's the reason why our moral authority is declining. It's so easy, for example, for Steve to see that you have a gorilla there in Russia bullying a small country. He sees that. There's no doubt about it. Many conservatives see that. But they don't see this bully, this powerful gorilla in Middle East named Israel, bullying the Palestinians into submission and killing and arresting all the time and torture. And the human rights organizations condemn them, and they care less because they use the power of them and the United States to achieve their goal. That's why when we talk about Ukraine, it sounds hollow. Why Russia cannot interfere in Ukraine, because we allow Israel to play roughshod on the Palestinians, to kill them at any moment, to arrest them, to change the borders. By the way, in this Gaza, didn't come up, they reduced already the surface area of Gaza by 20%. They don't think they're going to be leaving all Gaza. They will take enough perimeter to claim that's our safety zone.
So
and that's really what the other side need to see, how they should recognize immoral act, whether it's by Russians or by us or by the Israelis.
Well, I think it's hard sometimes, Steve Mnuchin, for people to put their hands around what is the immoral act going on in – whose immoral act is going on in the Ukraine?
Well, personally, I think the immoral action, you know, I don't have any problem with the ethnic Russians in Ukraine having disagreements with Kiev. I think it is a little out of the bounds to have military equipment slipping in from Russia. The rocket or the missile, excuse me, that most experts believe shot down the airliner is a piece of equipment that the Ukrainian army does not own. But apparently was given to the Republic of Donetsk militia by the Russians. I didn't say the Russians shot the thing down. We believe that the militia did, but with a piece of equipment given to them by Russia. There's about zero evidence that it was the Ukrainian military that shot it down, because they don't have that piece of equipment. So I think the... You know, Russia is doing what they feel is in their national interest. They feel they should have the ability to influence that area of the world, and nobody else should. They still believe in sphere of influence type politics. And you don't have to say that that's moral or immoral. That's just the way they look at it. And remember that Mr. Putin, you know, when our president says he's a 19th century thinker, Mr. Putin shrugs his shoulders and says, yeah, I'm okay with that. That's kind of the way the world works. But we need to recognize it, and we need to deal with it appropriately, but not sit there and think that just wagging our fingers at him are going to stop him from trying to, by force, influence this area.
But Israel is doing the same.
Okay, well,
the same thing.
Well,
they're acting 500
Adil, before we
years
go back
ago,
to that,
morality of wars.
Adil, before we go back to that, I kind of want to finish up with
sure.
some quick thoughts here from the three of you about all the latest polls that have shown how Americans are not happy with American foreign policy, whether it's on the right or the left. than what that says about where we're going as this country.
Well, I agree with you. I think there's dissatisfaction on all sides with the foreign policy. It has not been, it hasn't been strong. It hasn't been weak. It's been kind of noncommittal. And to be honest with you, even people who would consider themselves our adversaries would prefer at least a little bit of consistency and direction, so that they would be able to make their own plans and not have that uncertainty, which frankly is dangerous for everyone. So I would like to see our government be a little less ad hoc with its foreign policy than it has been in the last couple of years.
Jared Ball.
I don't think really it's ad hoc. It's averse to military action, not like the previous George Bush's administration. They didn't see any war they didn't like John McCain and Lindsey Graham. I think they are averse, and I am very grateful they're a little cautious about entering another war, because if President Obama has done what the conservative want, we would have been in war with Iran by now.
Jared, final thought from you.
Well, just I think that from the other side, I think that this country has not done enough to reduce the wars and the violence that this country has been in for so long. And for whatever is being given the Obama administration credit for refusing to enter other wars, it is, in an overt sense, is doing plenty in a more covert way by increasing the drone warfare, increasing the militarization of the African continent, for instance. So much is being done that is expanding the U.S. military and its reach and its harm in the world, maybe in a different way than the way Bush did. But this was sort of my point as a critic of the Obama presidency from the beginning, or the campaign even from the beginning, that this was exactly what was going to happen. It would put a prettier face on U.S. imperialism, but ultimately the end game is still the same. The results are only mildly, I think, different. Given all the covert military actions that are going on around the world, all the drone strikes, et cetera, there is still too much killing, too much violence being supported. Never mind what this country is doing, as I was just talking about, in supporting coups in Ukraine, as just one example, that this country is not doing enough to bring peace to the world. It is just sort of putting a prettier face on U.S. imperialism. I think that will unfortunately continue to be a problem.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a really engaging conversation from all fields of thought. So I appreciate all of you, Dr. Jared Ball, Dr. Otto Shimu, and Dr. Stephen Bucci, for taking your time today with listeners here on the Mark Steiner Show.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you all.